This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Plans are moving ahead for a statue in Kalamazoo's Bronson Park to commemorate Abraham Lincoln's only visit to Michigan. Coming up, Andy Robbins talks with Cameron Brown of the Kalamazoo Abraham Lincoln Project. But first, the history of the Kalamazoo River. Western Michigan University Geography Professor Lisa DeChano-Cook and the department's administrative assistant, Mary Lou Brooks, are co-authors of a book about the history of the Kalamazoo River. It's part of Arcadia Publishing's Images of America series. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
So how did this idea go from just the concept to a full-blown book that you can now read about the Kalamazoo River?
Well, I started as a student in the geography department to finish my degree and took a class from Lisa for physical geography and loved the subject. And then I took several water courses from Dr. Chan Xing Ha. And as I was talking to Lisa about the Kalamazoo River, which was my project, we struck up a conversation how we both had an interest in it. And we decided we should do a book.
So how did you get a hold of these photos? Where do they come from?
A lot of the photos came from the local historical societies or the libraries from towns along the river. Probably 90% of them came from the libraries and historical societies. Some we took ourselves, some we purchased online from different places, and some we got from people that we either talked to while we were out and about trying to find sources, or from online sources. Vanishing Kalamazoo was one of the Facebook pages that we actually got in contact with a lot of people that said they had photos and sent them to us in order for us to use.
A lot of the photos also came from along the way. We'd meet people and they'd invite us to their home and they'd open their photo albums and they'd share them. We traveled with our own computer and our own high resolution scanner and able to do that. And we had a blast with the people.
Were you surprised at how much people were willing to invite you into their homes and talk to you about this
absolutely.
stuff?
Absolutely. I think we were well fed along that trip. And people were just so happy. And they would give us phone numbers of their friends and of other people who might have information. But I was very surprised.
And it didn't hurt that my daughter traveled with us as our field assistant. And at the time, she was 9. And so, you know, all the older folks were all being grandmotherly and grandfatherly to her.
It was
so
great.
She helped.
Yeah. It was a wonderful experience at how many strangers would open their homes to us.
We should point out, though, we did have some struggles trying to find some stuff. We had a hard time getting pictures of Albion from Albion and from Marshall, just because we tried through the historical societies and either were told we couldn't use their stuff or they never contacted us back. So we had to get creative.
Which is where a lot of people in their contacts came in, and it was helpful.
And the one other thing probably that was different from this book than most is that we have a lot of air photos in there that came from our Upjohn Center because we have the access to that. And so we put probably a half dozen air photos in to show sort of the above view and how things may have changed or what they would have looked like at the time.
So do these photographs of the river and the surrounding area tell the reader a little piece, maybe not the whole story of this region, but they tell us something about the history of this stretch of southwest Michigan that basically starts in Jackson County and goes right up to Lake Michigan.
It does. The history of the Kalamazoo River goes back thousands of years. We started in the 1880s and kind of went with what was the river used for? Why was it important to the area? So we came up with our themes initially. Transportation was one of the first uses of the river, just getting things from one place to another, getting people from one place to another. You know, and then we talked about the railroads and the buggies and the urban streetcar system and stuff like that. But then we also were starting to see a change because then we had paddle boats and things that were being used in canoes and stuff for recreational purposes. Mm-hmm. Then it changed again. To a point, some of these were overlapping, but we had a big change with the industries that were built up along the river. And that, you know, that was a stretch in the 50s and 60s. And then it's sort of changed again, where it's back to more recreation than it was, you know, than it had been, because the industries are, most of the industries that were along the river are no longer along the river.
At some point, we start to see dams being built along the Kalamazoo River. Why were they there? How did this become a thing for a long time?
The dams were built for hydroelectric power. Probably the most well-known that's currently standing is the Trowbridge Dam. And that, when it was built, was sort of ahead of its time, and it actually produced enough power that it was sent to Kalamazoo to power the homes and businesses in Kalamazoo and all the areas from Kalamazoo to where it was located. So most of those dams were for hydroelectric power. Now, they were only supposed to last 50 or so years, which for their usefulness, they were, but now they're past their lifespan and they're crumbling, which is why a lot of them are being taken out now. But there's things that have to be done ahead of time because of the contamination that's in the water and in the sediments.
And then you also had the small dams for the grist mills, and mm-hmm. it sort of started that way and moved its way up to the hydropower.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that keeps coming up again in these pictures is natural and some man-made disasters. But flooding is a persistent story throughout this book and in these photos. How much did that devastate certain towns? I'm thinking especially some of the pictures of Albion and Battle Creek. I mean, there had to be people who really lost everything because of flooding along the way.
They did. The first major flooding event that we talk about in the book is from 1904, but then there's 1908, there's 1914, there's 1947, it just keeps going. You're along a river, you have to expect flooding. It is what it is. But yeah, towns like Albion, when the Homer Dam collapsed during the flood of 1904, had quite a bit of damage, and it did lose a good number of its population there. But there were a lot of people who said, we're coming back from this. We like where we are. This is a great area. We have good businesses going on. We're going to rebuild. And they did. Battle Creek, we highlight Battle Creek with the flooding because it seemed like every time it flooded, Battle Creek would get it, which it probably did because you have the Battle Creek and the Kalamazoo River coming together. And when they're both flooded, the water has no place to go.
Battle Creek came up with an interesting diversion project. And I don't know if it's right or wrong, but they did come up with it. And pretty much they encased the river in concrete and so that they could control the flow. The problem with that is now you're getting the river to move deeper and faster, and that affects all the towns down from you. And so flooding shifted and changed with that. And there were populations that were living where they put the diversion project, and they had to move and they were displaced. And so it affects a lot of people in a lot of different ways, the flooding. But the more we learn about floodplains and how to be prepared, maybe put our houses up higher on stilts or whatever they're called, it's interesting. People have learned to adjust or live with the flooding along the way.
But it is not that long ago. Last year comes to mind that the Kalamazoo River was flooding in Kalamazoo, and people were having to you know, figure out how to get water out of their basements, etc.
If you live in Comstock, you're very familiar with this. It seems like every spring, Comstock mm-hmm. floods. The more we build next to it, the more we put concrete down next to the river,
right,
the more chances you have of flooding.
Hard surface. We're
a lot of the problem with the flooding along the Kalamazoo. You know, if we didn't want to live right on the river, or we didn't want to, you know, be that close to the river, we wouldn't have some of these problems. It would still flood, you know, at times anyway, but we're adding to that problem.
And of course, there are photographs in here from the aftermath of the oil spill in 2010. This is another situation where it was a long-term cleanup that really impacted many people who live close to the Kalamazoo River. Where did you find these photos?
Some of those photos came from another faculty member on campus, Mark Jeunesse, who over the past 60 years has gone along the river to the dams and taken pictures upstream and downstream from those dams. He happened to be out, you know, when this happened, he went and took a lot of pictures. And so we got some of those pictures from him. A couple of the pictures came from one of the city workers in Marshall. She was part of the team that was helping to clean it up and do all the organization of it. And she allowed us to use some of the pictures that she had as well.
I think it's interesting about the oil spill is that it was actually on Talmadge Creek, which is a tributary that ran into the Kalamazoo. And when you think about a creek, it had to spill a lot of oil to travel that distance and have that much into the river. And that's concerning.
Especially when it reached all the way to Morrow Dam.
Right.
Which was huge. The one, and you mentioned the oil spill, we have a picture in there, the Ceresco Dam, which was slated to come out anyway, just not when it did. And as part of Enbridge's deal with the DEQ, they took it out. And so now one of the big deals with the people who used to have lakefront property is that they no longer do, because Ceresco Dam is gone, and so they don't have that lake there anymore. So there, you know, there's issues with, well, now I can't sell my house. It's not lakefront anymore. My property value has gone down, all this and that. So while it may have been good to take that out, there's still the other side of the coin with the people who wanted lakefront property and now don't have it and didn't have a choice. I mean, they could move, I guess, but they didn't have a choice of whether that dam was going to stay in or not.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. I'm speaking with Western Michigan University Geography Professor Lisa DeChano-Cook and the department's Administrative Assistant Mary Lou Brooks. They are co-authors of a new book on the history of the Kalamazoo River. It's part of Arcadia Publishing's Images of America series.
So one of the areas where industry and then contamination of the river meet is the paper industry.
Right.
And there's a lot of pictures in here of paper companies which were along the Kalamazoo River. Of course, the aftermath was PCB contamination, which is still being cleaned up as we speak right now. Is that sort of an interesting history there for the Kalamazoo River, both what the paper industry brought and what it left behind?
Absolutely. Places like Plain One Otsego were reliant on the paper industry. Had Bardeen Paper not been there, you know, Otsego would probably be smaller than it is. They brought a lot of jobs in. You can't take that out of history. At the time, it was great. At the time, we didn't know, we being the people there at the time, didn't know that this was going to be as big of an issue, that it's contamination. It was just something they did. They threw their waste into the river. Where else are you going to put it? You know, you're on the river. Let's put it in the river. But now that it's in there and we're starting to have to take out these old dams, the PCB, as long as it's covered by sediment, is not an issue. It's when it starts getting mixed up. Well, you're going to take a dam out, you're going to mix up that sediment. So one of the things now is to take that sediment and try and get it out that's built up behind those dams before you remove the dam to try and eliminate as much of that going downstream. That's a long process, and it's not an easy process. I've been watching them do it when they took out the Otsego County Dam. They're working on it. It's slow, and a lot of these dams will be removed because they want the river to kind of do its natural course now without having the dams in the way. But, you know, at the time, the paper mill was great, brought in lots of jobs, brought in right. lots of people to the area. It's only now that we're having to deal, you know, starting about in the 70s when we started realizing this. But we're seeing this now, right? You want to talk about PCBs, we can throw it into PFAS, too, which is the biggest thing now on the river. Right. And this is also being looked at as being caused from municipal dumpings and things like that that happened back in the 50s and 60s. Again, were no regulations, didn't know about it, you know, brought in lots of jobs for those who worked in those companies. But now we're dealing with the aftermath 50 years later.
I also have to say, you know, not for or against, but paper companies tend to get a really bad rap for a lot of things. And it is noteworthy to say that there were a lot of companies that were not in the paper industry that was along the river also.
That did the same thing.
That dumped a lot of bad stuff in there. So I think we all share a responsibility.
And there are organizations out there that are cleaning up the Kalamazoo River. That's sort of their purpose, is to go out and help clean up the river. So they understand, and I think everybody understands, that it needs to be cleaned up, because at one point, you wouldn't even want to go near it. It was smelly. It was the wrong color. Fish were dying. It was just bad. You know, everybody's told stay away from the Kalamazoo River. Today, probably at any given day from spring to fall, you'll find somebody on the river fishing, kayaking, canoeing, something along the river. And so it's in much better shape than it used to be. It's not completely clean. It probably will never be completely clean. We're going to have more instances of different types of contamination along the way, but we're much more aware of it now. So some of it, I think, can be headed off at the pass.
So as you look at all of these pictures and think about everything that you found in your research, what can you say about how much the Kalamazoo River has affected life for those of us who live anywhere near it, and how much have the people around the Kalamazoo River changed the composition of it, or the way it flows, or you know, what's in it? You know, how is that relationship? Is it really truly a two-way street?
It is a two-way street, absolutely.
It cycles.
In my geography class, we're always talking about, you can talk about the physical, but you have to throw the human in. They're not separated. The physical environment will sometimes determine what people do, and then people will do stuff that will determine how the physical environment reacts to it. So it's definitely a two-way street. There's been a lot of things that, you know, just the settlements along the river is because the river was there. That's, you know, mainly why you have your transportation there. That was the main mode of transportation. If you're along a river, you're great. You've got access, and things can build. As people started moving in, though, then things changed a little bit with the river because we dumped in, or we used it for this or that. We put dams on it, which at the time made sense. We were using it for power. We were using it for these things. But it does change the course of the river, and it just does change how the river flows. Just the change of the mouth as it enters Lake Michigan was a human change. The old mouth was farther south than it is now. It used to silt in, and the people would have to go out and dig it out. So often they decided, no, we're not going to keep it here. We're going to move it northward, and they did. It doesn't silt in anymore. They don't have to worry about it. But that's something that people did, not something the river did on its own.
I also think we have industries that are new along the river. As we think of industries as old and dying, we have new ones. They're just different because now we have all the microbreweries and those kinds of companies that are coming in, which is a positive because they bring people to the river and they get to see how beautiful it is, and then they'll care more about it. But it is still an industry. So we're just seeing it evolve.
And there's a picture, at least one in the book, of Arcadia Brewing in Kalamazoo, which sits right on the river. And they've actually made it so if you're kayaking or canoeing down the river, you can actually stop at Arcadia Brewing. You could hook up your boat right there and get off, have your beverage or whatever, and get back in and keep going. There are, you know, rules about boating and drinking, but they've really sort of embraced, they know they're on the river, they know what they can and can't do, but they're also trying to make it inviting for people who are trying to use the river for recreation.
So anytime somebody is trying to go and explore the history of anything, there's something that always gets left not quite uncovered. Is there anything that you were seeking in this book that you didn't find, that you really would have wanted to know, or something that you really would have wanted to include, that just for whatever reason you never found it in the course of your research?
Two things come to my mind, and they're sort of very similar, is the fact that we don't have a lot on Marshall and we don't have a lot on Albion. So we don't have sort of a history of how Marshall really utilized the river like we do for Albion or like we do for Kalamazoo or Battle Creek. And the same with Allegan. Very big town on the river, but we just couldn't get that history. And
right.
And to us, that's sort of where we feel the book is lacking, is that we couldn't get those, because they're not small towns on the river. They're pretty important. And we can surmise it based on what else has gone on, but we really don't know. And that, for me, I guess, is where I feel that we missed the mark, because we couldn't get some of that information or some of those pictures.
Yeah. We do have both towns in there and information. We seem to get them from individual sources. And I kind of wonder what, you know, every town has their management, and it would have been nice to have been able to see what were their plans back then. Where did they think they'd be? Did they get to their benchmark that they wanted?
Especially with Marshall having their electric power plant on the river, which mm-hmm. actually used to be called Perrinville. That part of town used to be called Perrinville, and then you had Marshall. And so we sort of have this lack of, why is it not Perrinville? Why did it go to Marshall? What happened in there? Was it, you know, was it just a financial decision? Was it a environmental decision? Who made the decision? All that sort of stuff. So we do have some history in there that's sort of left as a gap that we just don't know. And we couldn't find the answer to.
Right.
Western Michigan University Geography Professor Lisa DeChano-Cook and Mary Lou Brooks, the Geography Department's Administrative Assistant, are the co-authors of Images of America, Kalamazoo River. Thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
Details about the book from Arcadia Publishing can be found at wmuk.org.